Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. I'm your sublime host, Mr. Roger Z. Great word. I've been thinking about doing this word of the day calendar just to increase my vocabulary. There's a band called Sublime. Anyway, I'm your host, and what I love to do is to present great music to the public of White Plains, and now that we're on Verizon as well, to some areas surrounding here. Today, my special, awesome, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious guest.
Sublime.
Sublime is John, you like that word?
Yeah, I like it.
John Colbert. So, this is part two of our show, and the first show went great. John, you've been in the music business a long time.
Very long time.
You're a composer, you're a keyboardist, you're a singer, mostly a behind-the-scenes guy these days.
I'm a man of many hats, as I have to be, just to keep my head warm.
Play the 10-second theme that every man will know you by.
Okay.
And what is it?
That is ESPN Baseball Tonight, which I wrote in 1990.
And I promise we wouldn't talk about the financial aspect about that. Okay, one of the great things, you know, timing is everything. Everybody always says, well, I wish I'd been born 50 years ago because the kind of music that I make now was what was in vogue then.
Yeah.
And you came up in the halcyon years of rock.
Halcyon is a better word than sublime, if you ask me.
Okay. I'm just very excited to be in here today. We were talking about it, 19 years old. You were hanging out every day in the record plant, which at the time was like the biggest recording studio in America.
That was my crucible.
Every day you would meet people like the Rolling Stones, some of the Beatles, Cheap Trick. And you recorded with John Lennon.
I recorded with him. I did a couple of TV shows with him, some videos. Went out to dinner with him a couple of times.
And we talked about the hand clap.
Yeah.
We talked about the synth you play. The most famous song you played on with him was
A Stand By Me, that I played the string ensemble on. Also, he had a Mellotron. You know what a Mellotron is?
Yes, I do.
It's a big keyboard. This
Moody was, Blues. Like,
Moody Blues, exactly. And my rehearsal room at the record plant is where he stored his Mellotron. He kept it in our room, so I got to fool around with it. And it was the coolest thing in the world because you would just press one note down and it would play the beginning of Bungalow Bill.
Really? He had it programmed?
It was all in there. And the flutes from Penny Lane and all kinds of things, they were all in there. So if you wanted to hear how the Beatle records were made, a lot of them were just in there.
So they used the Mellotron on the Beatles?
They used the Mellotron on a bunch of tunes. Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane, Bungalow Bill, a lot of stuff on the White Album. And all those sounds were in that Mellotron, and we just spent days and days just fooling around on that, just holding down notes and listening to what was on there. Very cool.
Well, we talked in the last show, we talked about you touring with Henry Gross, Shannon, we talked about that stuff. One of my things is, it's so hard to have a lengthy career in the music business.
Yeah.
We were talking, you have some kids in college, and now it's...
Gotta pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we talked about niches, and I'm so impressed because you found your niche. And nowadays it's hard because back in the 60s, they would, you know, for a TV show, they would hire, you know, a 12-piece band to come in and do it. Nowadays, you hire a synth player.
Right, I do stuff myself in my basement. That's what I do. I have all the equipment to simulate an orchestra and drums. I play the drums. I have them in the house.
So you basically, your niche is playing background music to commercials.
Yeah, I do a lot of that.
When you told me before, when the refrigerator door opens.
Yeah, I do all the Arm & Hammer spots. And so you have to score it, you know. They send you the video. They send you a quick time on the computer. You load it in. And you have to score along with the woman opens the refrigerator. They need the music to do something at that point. And she puts the little Arm & Hammer product in there, and you have to do something. And the advertisers want, you know, a certain feeling, and say want certain parts of the picture to be hit and, you know, notated, and that's what I
do. Okay, I mean, but seriously, because, you know, I opened my refrigerator, and I got the Arm & Hammer in there.
Yeah.
But my...
I can come over and play while you do it, if you need to be underscored.
But I mean, seriously, do they... okay, so they send you the video, and do they say, okay, when the refrigerator opens, I want this kind of a feel, like kind of a...
Well, they're like usually exciting. Not that specific.
Okay.
You know, usually they... I mean, those types of things, they pretty much know what I do, and they just say, you know...
They've hired you because they've seen your work.
Right. And they say, well, this particular scene, we want... a flourish on that particular scene. Okay. That's the point we want. We want you to stop here. So she says that particular line in the clear. Those kinds of things, if they want to tell you that, they do.
30-second commercial. How long does it take you to write the music for it?
If it's that kind of a thing?
Yeah.
It could be 2-3 hours.
How many do you do a year?
Well, I'd like to do as many as I can. They're all competition. So what happens is I get all these spots come in, I work on them, I send them out, and then I forget about them.
So it's
and every
all
once
on
in
spec?
A while somebody will call and say, we're taking this one, and that one's going on the air.
So they don't even pay you like...
No, they pay me. They pay me to do it. But they pay you more if they take the one
okay.
you did.
Okay. You know, I tell my kids, we live in such a... Whenever they feel like being lazy, they don't want to do work. You know, my son says, I don't believe in homework. What's the point? And I just tell them, you know what? America's the place where everybody in the world comes to make it, because at least you have a chance here.
Yeah.
You know, there is prejudice about certain things, but compared to the rest of the world.
And I tell them, the rest of the world, this is the place.
You want to be lazy? There's 50,000 people who will eat, who will salivate to eat your lunch. So I know the competition. I mean, they got Stuart Copeland trying to do this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
The drummer. So
like you said, the music business is kind of shrinking. There, you know, there's less stuff for people to do, so there's more competition for what there is to do.
Yeah, and the orchestra pits now have less people in them. They're allowed to play tapes and stuff.
So, you know, as a musician, you have to keep moving. It's like a shark. You can't just say, I'm going to do this and do it.
And the whole model now of like recording an album is gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I started working with Tom Chapin back in 1988. I met him because I was a studio musician playing on people's albums and stuff, and he was doing his first children's record at that time.
Which is his niche.
Which is now his niche. And he keeps saying he never thought that it would be a career. He thought he'd do a kid's record because his kids were 8 and 6 at the time, and my daughter was 1. And we all thought, you know, hey, this is great. We have kids. We'll do a kid's record. And it turned into a whole career. And I'm still working with Tom. We still do family shows all over the country. We just got back from Oregon last week.
My friend Michael Bram plays drums for some kind of family kind of show. They go into Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah.
Crumpled.
They don't wear giant costumes, do they?
You know what? If they pay me $300 an hour, I'll wear a giant banana suit. I don't care.
Yeah, I'll do it. But like I was saying, in those days, we booked time in a recording studio. I was a studio musician. He hired me to come in and play on the record. We had an engineer, and we had a recording studio that was maybe $200, $250 an hour.
Right, which was probably the equivalent of $1,000 an hour now.
Yeah, we had a whole band. We had a drummer, a bass player, me, you know, Tom plays guitar, we had another guitar player. And we spent days and days in the studio laying down the basic tracks, came in, did all the overdubs, mixed,
well,
put out a record. And it was a record, a big 12-inch record. With a
Where you could actually read the liner notes.
You could read the liner notes.
You could
notes.
Actually,
yeah.
Came with a poster. But that's the way they do it in Nashville still. So
yeah,
that's
they do.
Cool.
But nowadays, you know, Tom comes over to my house and we put tracks down, and then we add whatever we have to add. We'll get Eric Weisberg and Larry Campbell to come in and play on it, you know. And so things are a little bit different.
Well, we've
but
talked.
The finished product, I think, is better now. Anyway,
you do.
Yeah.
You think it's better computerized than having like the 4 or 5 people in the studio banging it out?
No, I still like having the people banging it out, but I think nowadays you can because you're not spending the $250 an hour in the studio, you can spend more time getting it, you know, just the way you want it.
You know, it's so fascinating talking to you, but we're eating up our playing time. So, introduce the first song you're going to play for us.
Okay, well, the first song is from my album, which is called...
Hold on. Okay. Now, I've been instructed not to let my hands shake.
Can you do it?
I'm going to give it the
big... Take your lessons? Okay. It's called Here's Your Canoe. Recorded, coincidentally, in my basement at Cobert Operations Recording Studios. And this song is called Fooling Myself, which I wrote with my friend Katie Mack, who's a great singer, songwriter in her own right.
I was just going to say last time, I also heard a little bit of Randy Newman.
Randy Newman, I've gotten
your
that.
Stuff.
Yeah, I've gotten that before.
Well, let's hear it.
I love Randy Newman, so...
I was waiting for the drum solo.
Yeah, I didn't bring it.
You play at Lucy's Lounge in Pleasantville.
I do every month. I get a Wednesday every month. It's the 20th of February this month.
Okay.
It's a great place. Lucy's is great. Rob, the bartender, is great. Murph. Petey Hop runs the great open mic jam on Monday nights, which that's how I met Pete. It's just a great place to hang out.
More Sugar magazine, the Westchester Monthly. Mm-hmm. I write something called Roger's Reviews.
That's a great column.
And February, there's going to be a piece out on Lucy's Lounge and Pete's. And I think I quote you one line.
Oh, good. Huh?
I think I quoted your line on the bartender, Rob Catalano.
Yeah.
I told him I was doing an article. He gave me a free drink. So I got to make sure I say something
nice to him.
You got to.
I play at Opus once a month, too, in Upper Monk.
Opus 465. Another nice place.
A very nice place. I'm going to be there on the 9th, February 9th.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure when this...
Hi.
Do you do there once a month, or...?
I hope to do it once a month. I did it once so far last month, and they asked me back for this month, so hopefully they'll keep asking me back.
I applied to do a gig there, and they told me I was too bluesy.
Too bluesy?
Told me their patrons don't want to hear the blues. Uh-huh. They want to hear more pop stuff. So I've been working on just playing my, pop cover tunes.
Sure.
But I...
A little Billy, a little Elton, a little Van Morrison...
Well, that's not what I do. But that's
what
not,
do you do?
It's
are you Beatles.
I do
Stones.
Yeah,
Zeppelin.
Yeah, Van Morrison, uh-huh. Little Van Morrison. But let's not. Enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
So, what are you going to do next for us?
I don't know. You need any carpentry done?
You know what? Let me take that moment.
Okay, sure.
As my non-shaky hands plug this beautiful weighted key electric piano.
It's a wonderful keyboard.
Now, is there an organ sound on that, or is it just pure electric piano? I mean, I don't want you to change the sound, because we got everything set right.
It says piano or voice. I don't see anything organ.
Okay. But it's got weighted keys, which basically means it feels like a real piano.
It feels like a real piano.
So what would you play for us now?
I'll play a song called Situation.
We've all been in one of those.
I wonder
I love the way you put, are they major seventh chords in there?
So yeah, major like, seven with a little nine.
Yeah, it's just, and you know what, for some of you younger viewers out there who are musicians, what I especially appreciate about what you're doing, there's nothing forced, and you have your own voice. You're not trying to be anything other than what you are.
I'm trying.
Yeah. I review CDs. I get a lot of CDs from people.
Yeah.
And I only review CDs that I can really get behind. But, you know, sometimes I'll get a CD and I'll get someone and they're singing in a style that's obviously not them.
They're trying to be someone else, or
right,
imitate someone, or maybe it just crept into their being so much that they can't get away from it.
But, you know, I read this one thing about Albert Collins, famous blues man.
Mm-hmm.
And he originally started out, he was a B.B. King clone. So he went to the record company and they said, I already got B.B. King. I don't need another one.
Uh-huh.
Go home and become yourself.
Right.
And that's when he developed his distinctive style. Your style is so natural, so smooth. And I love that major seventh, ninth thing in there. Really nice. Okay. You know, it's just so easy to talk to you that it's just getting away from me. So let's get to the canned questions.
Okay.
I have to give a shout out to my friend Suzanne, who said, you know, Roger, I watched the Actor's Studio and you have to have canned questions. So rather than argue with her, I decided she was right. So the question that you prepared, I'm going to do them in opposite order. If
okay,
you could put together your dream band, and you could have multiple bands,
uh-huh,
if we were going to put together a Night at the Garden, a tribute to you, and you're going to come out with different people, you can bring back the dead for this. Who would play with you? My head was moving all over.
Well, Steve Gadd is a great drummer. I'd probably have to have Steve Gadd playing drums.
Yeah, he's played with Eric Clapton.
And I hate to, you know, leave out a lot of the great drummers that I've played
but
with. You
this
know,
is your
Alan
gig, too.
Schwartzberg could be one of my drummers, and I work with him a lot. But let's put Steve in there. Alan won't be too offended. I have a friend, Wayne Pezwater, a bass player who died a few years ago. Very good friend of mine, played on a lot of the Tom Chapin records. We did a lot of studio work together in the city. And he was my favorite bass player. And just a great guy. I miss him a lot. So I would put him in there. I would be playing keys, and Eric Clapton over there, and Jimi Hendrix over there with Wayne, Steve Gadd, Michael Brecker, and Miles Davis. And let's see, Paul McCartney and Frank Sinatra.
They would be the subs, right?
They'd be singing.
Alan Schwartzberg, did he play on the Jimi Hendrix records?
He played on lots of different things. I work at his studio called Deep Diner in the city. And that's his studio with Bob Mann, the guitar player, who works with record producer. He works with James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt and all those people. And they just have walls filled with gold and platinum records. Peter Gabriel and you name it, they're up there. Kiss.
What song did you hear that made you say, I gotta be a musician?
You're gonna laugh, but it's Light My Fire.
Jose Feliciano or...
No, The Doors. The Doors. I mean, I was 13. I got... The Doors were out, and I got a Farfisa mini compact organ.
Da-da-la-da-da-da-da-da.
And in Ditmas Junior High School in Brooklyn, I could play... Am I allowed to? I don't know. But
well, yeah, they won't get us for that 10
right.
second.
But I could play that, and I was famous in the school because I could play, you know, and I had the organ. It wasn't the same organ as they had, but, you know.
You know, speaking of that, it's a sad thing. When I grew up, I lived on a block that had three temples.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a church nearby. And we had lots of dances from the time I was in seventh grade till the time I was a senior in high school. There were tons of dances, whether at the school or at the places of worship. And the dances were played at by kids who were in the schools,
yeah,
like the high school bands. I don't see that. My daughter's in high school. Number one, I don't see her go to any dances. Number two... I don't see that happening.
Oh, they
anymore.
Do it. They still do it.
They still have
yeah,
teenagers.
My friend goes to Greeley up in Chappaqua, and they have a band up there. A couple
okay.
of bands.
Well, it's maybe because my kids don't go to them that I don't know.
Well, maybe. Josh is taking guitar lessons, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, guitar is coming back now.
Yeah, oh, it never left.
I actually heard a you know, my daughter is a big rap fan, and I actually heard, like, a guitar on one of the songs that she listened to, so I was very, very happy.
Well, we had Daryl McDaniel from Run DMC.
Sure, sure.
He did a cover of Cats in the Cradle.
Really?
Yeah, it's a long story, but he found out when he was 40 that he was adopted. And a song by Sarah McLachlan hit him in a particular way, and he was very touched by it. So when he decided to do the remake of Cats in the Cradle, because it's about a father and son relationship.
Right, the father never had time.
He asked her if she would sing with him on it. And he told her the story about how he found out he was adopted. She told him she found out she was adopted. So it was an amazing coincidence. And we did a fundraiser for World Hungry Year, which we do a lot of with Tom. And Daryl came down and did that song with us. So it was a whole conglomeration of Tom playing acoustic guitar, me on piano, and the rap. And then he brought his, you know, his rap musicians with him to do the keyboard parts and the drums. And it was great. It was everything all together. Folk music hits rap music hits rock music. And, you know, why should there be barriers between different styles of music, you know?
Let's end on that note. Why should there be barriers?
No barriers.
It's all about marketing.
Everybody find your own voice.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're out.
How's that for harmony?
Thank you for giving me and you're out. I love that.
Okay.
No one gives that to me.
I like to let people know. So
no, because we're standing there.
Like, yeah.
Once again, beautiful.